Call the order of this meeting of the Ways and Means Committee. We do have a quorum. Our first item of business is approval of our minutes from yesterday. Representative Robbins, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair. I move approval of the minutes. Thank you.
Representative Robbins moves approval of our minutes from Wednesday, April 23rd. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have at the outset of our agenda three files that we have previously heard that the Senate has taken action on, and so we have the Senate files now in our possession. And so we are going to have a series of motions now to move those bills out of this committee into the floor. Because we have already heard and discussed these bills, we are not going to have discussion or presentation of the bills. We're just going to do through a series of motions, and this is by agreement of both sides at this point. So the first of those bills is Senate File 1959, which is the Veterans Finance Bill. I will move Senate File 1959 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. I will then move to the DE amendment after the enacting clause and insert the language from House File 2444, the first engrossment. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. I'll now renew my motion that Senate File 1959, as amended, be recommended for placement on the General Register and that nonpartisan staff be directed to make any necessary technical changes. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Next, we'll move to Senate File 2298, which is the Senate companion for the Housing Finance Bill, House File 2445. I will move Senate File 2298 to be recommended for placement on the General Register. I will move then to delete everything after the enacting clause and insert the language from House File 2445, the first engrossment. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. I'll now renew my motion that Senate File 2298, as amended, be recommended for placement on the General Register and that nonpartisan staff be directed to make any necessary technical changes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Finally, we have Senate File 2216, which is the Senate companion of House File 2443, the Commerce Finance Bill. And I'll note that when we heard the Commerce Finance Bill on Tuesday, we adopted an amendment which members can find in their packets and which will be incorporated into the bill when it's engrossed. And with that, I'll move that Senate File 2216 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. And I'll then move to delete everything after the enacting clause and insert the language from House File 2443, the first engrossment, as amended. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. And I'll renew my motion that Senate File 2216, as amended, be recommended for placement on the General Register and that nonpartisan staff be directed to make any necessary technical changes. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. That was some good work we got done. Very efficient.
All right.
We'll now move. Yeah. We'll now move on to the bills we have to hear today. The first of which is House File 2130 from Representative Kraft. And as Representative Kraft makes his way to the front, I will move that House File 2130 be recommended for placement on the General Register. Representative Kraft, when you're situated, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair. So House File 2130 arises out of a tragedy that happened in my district back in September of 2024, where Stephen Bailey got behind the wheel of his car with a blood alcohol level of 0.325, more than four times the legal limit. He went to Park Tavern in St. Louis Park, couldn't find a parking spot, and then drove at high speed through the outdoor patio, killing Park Tavern server Christina Folkerts and Methodist Hospital unit coordinator Gabe Harvey and injuring nine other people. Bailey had five prior DWI convictions in Minnesota and one when he was younger in Wisconsin. This caused me to look at our DWI policies, especially around ignition interlock and multiple offenses from a public safety, you know, keeping the public safety perspective. What I found was a mismatch between the harm caused by repeat offenders and the likelihood of repeat offenses happening, and the time period that we require repeat offenders to be on interlock. More detail on that. Most people that commit a DWI offense don't commit a second. But if someone commits a second, their likelihood of committing more goes up significantly. So the main things this bill does are increase the interlock time requirements for repeat offenders. It ramps them up much more significantly. It increases the look back period in certain situations from 10 to 20 years in counting offenses. It makes sure that treatment is required anytime someone commits multiple offenses, and also removes some obstacles to getting on interlock so that we can have more, because interlock is shown in many studies to be very effective at preventing DWI repeat offenses. On the fiscal side of this, the net of this is that it is expected that more people will be on interlock and that will require driver and vehicle services to do more assessments and administrative work, a total of 4 FTEs. That's the main cause of the fiscal note. The funding is coming from the driver and vehicle services operating account. There's no general fund impact.
All right. And Representative Kraft, I understand you have an author's amendment. I will move the A3 amendment. Can you briefly describe the A3 amendment?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Forgot about that. The amendment just makes clear where the appropriation is coming from for this to be a standalone bill, and also that indicates that if it were to be found in another bill, that it wouldn't be double counted.
Members, discussion to the A3 amendment. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Kraft, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's important, first of all, to recognize that sometimes people that are most likely to recommit crimes should be held to a higher standard and have more punishment. So thank you for that recognition. This is a considerable opportunity for the increased use of these interlocks for people, and there is some considerable concern from people about the costs that are involved. First of all, could you remind the committee how much these systems cost per person?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Novotny. Yeah, they on installation, they'll run $100 to $200, and then $75 to $150 a month, depending on the type of vehicle. So we're talking, $1,500 to $2,000 a year. If someone is of lower means, there are ways of getting that reduced, sometimes substantially, both from guidelines given by DVS, and also some counties and judicial districts have some other programs for folks of lower means.
Representative Otte.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Kraft, how many companies are installing these interlocks right now?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otte, I think there's 6 or 7 or so in Minnesota.
Representative Otte.
Okay. Do you have that list, or could you provide me with that list before this gets to the floor?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vani, absolutely, I can provide you that. I don't have it off the top of my head, but yeah, I can get that to you.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Any further discussion to the amendment? To the amendment, Representative Kosnick?
Yes.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Stevens. Representative Kraft, we've heard this bill in transportation, and I haven't had a full time to analyze how the Senate transportation bill is lining up, but my understanding is they may be paying for it in a different area. Is that, are you familiar with how the Senate version of this bill is being financed?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, the next step in the Senate is a hearing in Judiciary next week, and I'm not familiar with the specifics of how it would be paid for, but my sense is that it would be, I've had a lot of discussions with DVS on this, and that this is a pretty typical way for them to handle this kind of stuff.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate that. I guess we'll be taking a closer look if just different avenues to pay for it, whether it's in the DVS account, which I'm fine with, I guess. But if there's a different area, maybe that's something we would explore too. But I ask for the purpose of when we go into conference committee and how to handle it, because it is currently in the transportation bill, members. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion on the A3 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A3 is adopted. Discussion to the underlying bill. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft. I know how hard you've worked on this, and I know you let evidence lead the way for you and data when you made your decisions, and I just want to thank you for all you're doing for our shared community.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I was looking at the fiscal note really quick. So can you let me know about how much money goes into that special revenue account? I can see how much is coming out, but in a year's time, how much typically goes into it?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, I'm actually not familiar. When I talked to DVS, they said this was not an issue, but I'm not familiar with exactly how much goes into it. I can get back to you.
And I think Ms. Adrians might be able to look into that for us. I don't know that we have the answer now, but Ms. Adrians.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Rarick. What I know is that the account receives funding from vehicle services fees, things like vehicle tax titles and motor service fuel tax, driver's license training schools. All of the fees and revenue that come from those things go into this account. But I can find out the exact amount for you and get back.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then also, can you find out for me not just how much goes in, but how much is already spoken for or allocated in other places so we know what is unspent or unused? And then last thing I would say, Representative Kraft, is I just want to say a personal thank you because my daughter works at Methodist Hospital and frequents that tavern and that patio often. And while the people that were affected and hurt and killed were not her direct colleagues, they're all one big family at Methodist. And so on behalf of the families and the staff at Methodist, thank you.
Representative Akam. So, Baker.
Thank you.
Not Akam. Representative Baker.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kraft, I see the proposal is you're requiring some more treatment with the new proposal after a little bit different than what it was before. Again, I like the intent of the bill. What I also know is our limited resources, and when you send people to treatment that aren't wanting treatment, that's going to be a cost burden, and I'm just wondering about the actual effect of how that's going to work. They shouldn't be able to drive. But if they really are not interested in going to a treatment, they probably then may not have the resources to pay for it themselves, which is likely going to fall on state taxpayers. What is the reasoning or the rationale, I guess, to say they have to go to treatment at this certain level now on this new proposal? Just give me your idea and your thoughts about why do you think treatment is going to be real helpful in this area?
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you actually look at the current statute, treatment is required in nearly all cases already when there's multiple offenses. There was one or two where it wasn't. I spoke with folks in the DWI task force about this approach of increasing the amount of penalty or the amount of time someone needs to be on interlock, and what they said is they appreciated that but wanted to see also a focus on treatment in all cases. So we can't force people to do the right thing, but my hope with this is that there's a way to change behaviors, that you're going to have to spend more time on interlock. We're going to make it easier to get on it so that you actually do it and start developing these behaviors. And actually, interlock can help reinforce treatment because you're repeatedly having to blow in and show that you're sober.
Representative Baker?
You're correct on that. Treatment's not going to make that change, but I think I just want to make sure that we are careful to try to put people into a box when they don't want to be in the box and they really have a disease they can't get over, but they shouldn't ever have the ability to drive without knowing that they're sober. So, again, I support the bill. I just wanted to ask that question. Maybe I'd have a few more things offline about this. There is a couple of those versions, again, where they are required to do this now in more frequently now with your bill. So I will follow up with you later on this. Thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you again. Representative Kraft, this is the second engrossment, so it's changed two times since we were heard it in transportation, and I didn't have the ability to follow this specific bill in the other committees. Are you able to, and maybe offline we can if we can't do it right now, share what the changes are since introduction And I asked just so that the version that we have in the transportation bill, if it's, I'm not sure that this is the same language exactly or not. Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Koznick. The basic parts of the bill around the interlock and things is the same. There are some technical changes. There are some things that that my partner in the Senate, Senator Latz, I talked about license plates. When police have to confiscate a license plate from someone that's committed a DWI infraction, today they have to crank it off of the vehicle, and sometimes this is happening late at night. And so one of the changes is giving them the ability to put an non-removable sticker on there to invalidate the license without them having to actually physically remove it. So that's one of the changes. I'm happy to go through with you all of them, but the substance of the bill, the interlock pieces, haven't changed.
Representative Koznick?
Yeah. Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Representative Kraft, maybe you and I can just circle back, because if it does remain in the transportation bill, which version do you prefer? I presume it's the second engrossment. Just want to make sure. And we could work with the revisers to make sure that the most recent engrossment, if that's the best language, that we will make sure that that's also included in the omnibus bill.
Seeing no further discussion, closing comments, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. And Representative Rarick, I really appreciate your comments. One of the things I didn't mention as part is that this, tragedy really left a gaping hole in our community. Because if you live in St. Louis Park, then you have spent time at Park Tavern. And I myself have spent time on that patio. So it had a serious physical impact on so many people, but it also had a really mental impact on my community. So I appreciate your words, and I would really appreciate the questions and the community support.
All right. There being no further discussion on House File 2130, I will renew my motion that House File 2130 as amended be recommended to be placed in the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. And House File 2130 is recommended for placement in the general register. Members, now we will return to the budget. We have three budget bills before the committee today. All three bills will be laid over. We will start with House File 1943, the Elections Finance Bill. So as Chairs Freiberg and Quam come to the table, I will ask Ms. Adrians if she could state the target of this committee and whether the bill is in compliance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Election Finance Committee received a target in the first biennium of a reduction of $1.824 million. That's for years fiscal 26 and 27. And then the target for fiscal years 28 and 29 was an additional $106,000 over the base established in the February forecast.
All right. Before you present the bill, there is an author's amendment. Should we adopt the amendment or discuss the amendment before we move to the bill as a whole?
If that's your preference.
Sure. All right. So we will go to the amendment first. I will move the A1 amendment. And Chair Freiberg, if you could describe the A1.
Well, sure. The amendment includes the policy bill that we passed out of the Elections Committee a few weeks ago, plus a few additional policy items that were negotiated as part of this budget discussion. Since we already passed that policy bill out of our committee, and this isn't a policy committee, I won't dwell on it. Suffice it to say, they're non-controversial provisions, but if any members here have any questions about any of those, I'm certainly happy to answer them. As far as the new policy provisions that were adopted since we passed out our policy bill, it includes some changes to the process where the Secretary of State gets lists of election judges from the parties. It includes Representative Engen's bill related to political expenditures by organizations that receive state funding, which we already passed off the House floor. It changes the in-person absentee ballot drop-off time from 8 p.m. to 5 p.m. It includes Representative Jones' bill related to apartment access by campaigns and census workers. And it includes the creation of a phone line that can be used in some circumstances by election administrators, enabling them to contact the Secretary of State. I don't know if Chair Quam has any...
Chair Quam, anything you'd like to add?
Basically, what we looked at were recent court over the past several years in elections. There have been court cases, so we tried to do clarification, technical things to take away confusion so local governments can consistently follow, and then also the phone line is they've got someone to call to get a uniform process answers across the state.
Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will just say I served on the elections committee this year, and I just want to thank Chair Quam and Chair Freitag that thank you for your, excuse me,
bribe.
It's a committee joke. It's an inside joke.
Okay.
And it's probably not all that funny, but the chair's got it, and so that's all that mattered. I just really appreciated the collaborative nature of the committee and how well the two chairs and committee members worked together. It was really a pleasure to serve on the committee, so thanks.
Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to both chairs, Chair Freiberg and Chair Quam. Chair Quam, you and I spoke briefly before this, and you were telling me about some of the things you were excited about and said these are some of the best revisions you've been working on. I was wondering if you could just highlight a couple of those.
Chair Quam.
Thank you. I've got several pages of lists, but frankly what it gets down to is there have been confusion and court cases with several counties and several elections. And by clarifying things that have to do with the election judge list and other areas where counties have not followed procedure, we hope to get rid of these repetitive court cases. So things on election judges, things on improving confusion on absentee voting. We also want to make sure that we don't accidentally destroy or throw away materials, but it's just looking at where we could agree across the aisle of making it clearer and improving our election integrity and the general populace's opinion of our election integrity.
Representative Creature.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair Quam and Chair Freiberg. I'd just add that I know you've been working on these. You've been talking openly about them. I'm happy to. I'll be voting for the amendment. I'll be voting for the bill. I wanted to support you both. Thank you.
Further discussion to the A1. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails, and the A1 is adopted. Chair Freiberg, could you describe the bill before the committee now as amended?
Well, sir, so it's a one-page budget, so I don't expect to be here super long. You know, the fiscal staff mentioned the budget target we got. That includes $200,000 for the Help America Vote Act match fund, $79,000 for an operating adjustment for the Campaign Finance Board, as well as the base budget for the Campaign Finance Board. And that's all that's in the budget.
Chair Quam, anything you want to add?
It was nice that we were able to agree on things, and we actually get more in federal dollars than what we're spending here.
Discussion to the bill as amended. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at a letter from the multi-housing agency that was in our packet, and I'm just curious as to why we landed at 24 hours notice to get into a building from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., which is outside of most normal office hours for folks that work in those buildings. And it could include weekends and holidays.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Rarick. That was from Representative Jones' bill dealing with apartment access. I apologize, I don't have the letter from the Multi-Housing Association in there. I mean, I can say that I think pretty much everyone at this table has experience trying to access apartment buildings. You know, I think having some, being able to give them some notice is helpful. So 24 hours seemed like a reasonable amount. And then, there's no requirement actually in the language that the person working at the apartment building be present on site. But I've been to many apartment buildings where they either are willing to give you the code to get in, they're willing to give you a key as long as you return it. So I always make sure to do that. So there are processes in place. you know, we don't want to keep anyone after hours if they don't have to be there. So most places have some sort of process to allow people to access the building. So as long as they're able to reach some sort of agreement with the candidate, then it's allowable.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there any penalty for that facility, that multi-housing unit, if they don't comply? What is the penalty?
Chair Freiberg.
I don't believe there's a penalty specified in the language, but I can double check that and get back to you.
Representative Rarick. Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Chair Quam, closing comments?
It is nice that we have a bipartisan election bill.
And Chair Freiberg.
Appreciate your support. Thank you.
All right. And with that, the bill is laid over. Next, we will move to House File 2442, which is the energy finance bill from our own Representative Acom and Representative Swazinski, who I understand is not available today, right? So we are going to hear the bill and entertain amendments while Representative Acom is getting settled. I'll turn to Ms. Adrians and ask her to tell the committee what the target was for this bill and if we're in compliance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The target for the energy finance bill was no change from base funding in both the 26 and 27 biennium as well as the 28 and 29 biennium.
All right. Chair Acom, I think it makes sense to take up the author's amendment since it's a DE, if that's all right with you.
Yes, please. I would move the DE3.
Chair Acom moves the DE3 amendment, and if you would describe the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the DE3 is the energy and climate finance or budget bill. And what I will say is that it is a lights-on budget that is based off of the February forecast and will just be providing base funding to the Department of Commerce Division of Energy Resources.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Since Representative Swazinski is unavailable today, I thought I should comment on this bill. The chair is correct that this is a lights-on bill. There were a number of points, as I understand it, that were negotiated, but resolution was unable to be reached, and so we have before us a very simple bill that just kind of keeps things rolling as we head toward conference committee with the other body. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative, we'll adopt the amendment and then we'll give you closing comments. All those in favor of the DE amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Closing comments, Chair Acom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all the members of the committee, the Energy Committee and staff, both partisan and nonpartisan. The work is much better because of all of you. I will just say I came into session this year with the hope of passing a budget because keeping government going is really the top priority this year, and so I feel like we are one step closer to that and that this has been a successful session so far.
All right, and with that, the bill is laid over. The last item on our agenda today is House File 2436, the Children and Families Finance Bill from Chairs Katiza, Batun, and West, and as they go up to the front of the room, I will turn to Ms. Adrians and ask her to describe the target and tell us whether the bill is in compliance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Children and Families Finance Committee received a target of $25 million over the base that was established in the February forecast for fiscal years 26 and 27. And the target in the TAILS is a reduction of $15 million for fiscal years 28 and 29 from the base.
Chair West, can you describe your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. House File 2436 is the Children and Families and Puppies and Kittens Omnibus Bill. It has been a delightful committee to be a part of, working with my co-chair, Katiza Batun. You might have seen a lovely picture of us holding a gavel together. That's front page news on MinnPost, so we're killing it. So, all quick rundown the budget here.
the policy item in the budget, and my co-chair will go over the finances. But as a quick summary, we included many of the policy in the governor's budget and in the department's policy bill. We also included a anti-kickback provision brought by Representative Gilman that the department supported so that we can take administrative actions if there are kickbacks received or given. There's a lot of clarifying ticky-tack kind of things, I would say, about implementing provider hubs, training requirements for seatbelt restraints and those kind of things. Many of those things are just coming to compliance. There's federal compliance with CCAP. In addition, we have some provisions to provide some regulatory relief and streamlining of compliance for child care providers. It was a bipartisan effort. Representatives Coulter and Mahler both brought terrific bills to standardize the licensing procedure and provide interpretive guidance to providers. And Representative Mahler's bill allowed some time for a appeal to be for a provider to pursue an appeal before things are posted. So say they have a violation posted, but then it gets addressed in an appeal. That kind of doesn't work for the provider. Representative Mahler correctly identified that's an issue. If we're going to have an appeal go through, it should be an actual appeal. Representatives Lesnikar had two terrific bills that provided some regulatory relief to providers and centers. These are modest steps, but they are moving the ball down the field. And Representative Nadeau had a bill, which I believe was Representative Tisa-Batun's bill last year, that deletes the sunset on the teacher's aid, allowing a little more flexibility. So that flexibility already exists, but it was kind of a pilot program that will now stay. Our committee had a big focus on child safety, and we have many positive provisions here. And some of those are we increased the fine on background check noncompliance. We've seen a gigantic surge in noncompliance with background checks. And with the thought of we want to ensure these are done so that people who should not necessarily be around children are not around children, that would be a good way to ensure those are done. We also had Representative Nash's bill on mandated reporter training. The training we've seen from the department is suboptimal, I would say, and focusing on identifying and recognizing abuse is a big focus of, that should be a big focus, which that his bill requires half of the training to be dedicated to that purpose. We also passed that bill off the floor, if that sounds familiar, but we're just making sure we're covering all the bases. Also, my bill requiring it for centers that have maltreatment, active maltreatment violations, requiring cameras in toddler and infant rooms, along with 60 days of data retention so that we can hold any kind of abuser accountable if such a situation arises, but also so that we can protect providers from things that they should not, they are not guilty of. But having a focus of on maltreatment for that provision was something that was brought up and a way we were able to get agreement on that bill. We also increased the posting time for maltreatment violations to 10 years. And then Vice Chair Hansen had a significant bill on relative foster care changes, helping reunite families when at all possible in foster care situations. There are some technical things around the Diaper Bank of Minnesota, which we probably don't need to spend time on. Representative Kraft had a bill to deal with a child who is in a hospital where their parent may be having a mental health crisis and the hospitals don't know what to do with the child. He had a bill that helps figure out how they can deal with that particular situation, because I can't imagine being forced in that situation and having it immediately be kicked to Child Protective Services. Then on the fraud front, my two provisions from a bill I had, House File 1916, reinstates the perjury for submitting false billing statements. That used to be standard practice prior to 2013. This is coming back in here. And jointly, the governor also had electronic attendance records for anybody who is operating in this space, and having access to those attendance records is a great way to verify that the children that are being cared for are indeed being cared for. There were a number throughout negotiations, there were a number of different
programs that we're looking at increased or decreased funding. The quick summary of those would be restorative policy grant program from Representative Feist. We did not cut it quite as much by as the governor did. We just did a minor haircut and goes to full funding later. And the FAME program from Representative Hansen. We've seen good results from that, and the committee agreed that that is somewhere we could increase spending. Food security was a big priority for my co-chair, so I will leave that section to her. But the one piece of money that I really want to highlight, because we both are quite excited about it, and I know our wonderful chair of Ways and Means is also excited about it, is $40 million of SSIS funding. And I really appreciate both chairs of the Ways and Means Committee for figuring out a way to make sure that's in our budget and doesn't get kicked out. So we'll be taking that to conference and vigorously defending it. And if there's more money to spend, well, that will be perfect place to land on it. But without further ado, I will kick it over to my co-chair.
Chair Katisa Batum.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson, and thank you, Chair West, for that good walkthrough on the bill and the policy provisions. Many of the other committees have separated policy and fiscal provisions into two separate bills. We were actually able to find a lot of agreement on a number of the policy provisions brought forth by other members as well as the department, and just decided to keep everything together this session. So that was really helpful. We found agreement really easily and quickly on a lot of the governor's provisions, including some of the federal compliance stuff regarding child care assistance, additional screening and things along those lines. Chair West, you didn't mention the scholarships. Provision. So yes, it's true. But that's another thing that we were both very excited about. The biggest ticket items, I think, outside of the SSIS funding were food security funding. So outside of the additional other food bill that we will hear in Ways and Means, we've been able to allocate an additional $2 million between food shelves, food banks, the tribal indigenous food program, as well as a prepared meals program that was brought forth by Representative Coulter. Just making sure that people who are hungry are have a variety of ways to get that support. Because when, as Representative Keeler likes to say, when we're hungry, we're hangry, and it makes the rest of life very difficult. So we were able to additionally include about a $6 million one-time allocation to the Early Learning Scholarships Program. We previously, last biennium, under Chair Pinto, we provided almost a $100 million one-time infusion, great, allocation to the Early Learning Scholarships Program. And the program is really important to so many families across the state, and Chair West and I really share support for what they're doing and doing all that we can do to continue access for families in that space. There is also funding for Chair West's modified camera surveillance program, so that child care centers who want to implement camera surveillance in their centers, although it's not a full mandate, there is money for them to access that, because we know that it can be a little bit of a funding challenge. So we're encouraging folks to participate in that and become early adopters. Let's see. Operating adjustments. We did include the full requested operating adjustment for the offices of the Ombudsperson for American Indian Families, for families, and for the foster youth Ombudsman's office as well. We are continuing to work with our partners in the Senate as well as the administration to make sure that the Department of Children, Youth, and Families has the support that they need to continue and finalize the transition to the brand new department. There are still pieces coming over from the Department of Public Safety as well as the Department of Human Services yet this year. And so there's still going to be some transition that's happening, some transition funding that they need to make sure that all the staff are able to be in the right place, and that they're being paid for the amazing work that they do on behalf of Minnesota's children, youth, and families. I think that's all. We'll stand for questions.
Discussion to the bill. Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm keenly interested in the money going to food shelves and food banks. And I see in my notes that we're excluding Second Harvest. And I'm wondering, I did quite a bit of background on the statutory language, who it goes to, Hunger Solutions. Hunger Solutions has been merged with the food bank. And so I literally went through several years worth of 990s for Hunger Solutions and the food bank and met with them. Besides that statutory appropriation, what else, where else is money going to? And have you done that level of scrutiny with the rest of it?
Chair, continue with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Rarick, for the question. So, yes, the food shelf program is the only program in Minnesota that receives base funding. So anything else that we have done is above and beyond that base funding. We wanted to include additional funding for those food shelves. The funding and the language that's included in this bill for food banks does exclude Second Harvest Heartland via the annualized operating budget, basically under $100 million. I worked with the banks to kind of get that information and figure out how we could get money out to the rest of the food banks that serve the greater Minnesota region. And then the bill that was brought forth by Representative Coulter is a program that operates through Open Arms. And they work with restaurants and help repackage prepared meals that then can be delivered to folks across the state. Just another way to make sure that we're seeing less waste in the food space, but then also repurposing those meals and getting the folks who are in need. And we did require that that any of the organizations that came before the committee would have provided their 990.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So are you using the statutory definition where the food bank is actually Hunger Solutions? Because last I looked at your bill, that was the statutory language, which Hunger Solutions in and of itself is just a shell now, and they have merged with the food bank. And so have you changed that statutory language since I last saw it in your bill?
Chair Katisa Wachin.
There hasn't been any changes to that language. Can you explain a little bit what you mean by it is just a shell and it's merged with the food bank? Which food bank are you speaking of?
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. The food group is called. So Hunger Solutions it has four board members left, zero employees, and in that way it's, you know, a shell. So they are just a fiduciary that is merged with the food group. The food group, I went through their 990s, their audited financials, their merging documents of how they merged, and I met with the executive director and another person from both entities. And so just making sure that we don't have another Second Harvest Heartland on our hands, because I really didn't want to support an appropriation that went to an organization that spent $721,000 on their CEO, and their top 10 people made $3 million and were over the governor's salary. So I just want to make sure that you've used that same kind of scrutiny since we're doing more look at these things. So you said that you looked at their 990s with other organizations in committee. Can you just, what did you look at on the 990? Because you can say you looked at a 990, but I want to know what did you look at?
Yeah. Chair, could you say what you have?
Thank you. Chair West, if you want to take that, we've been working in partnership on these provisions. So.
Sure. Chair West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Katisa-Witoon and Chair Rarick. So in our committee rules that we agreed to, it requires anybody who has any legislatively directed money, they must bring the 990 of the recipient organization. So that's what Chair Katisa-Witoon is referring to, is the committee always has access when we're hearing them. Personally, whenever I, especially given recent events, when I look at a 990, I just go straight to the compensation page and look down that. That's my main focus myself. But the highlight is the committee always had access to the 990 when a bill was heard with legislative directed money.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, chairs, for that. I know this is the first time that we've really done this in my 13 years of the legislature, but it's interesting what we've uncovered. And in my notes, it even says that this bill specifically does not send money to Second Harvest Heartland because what we've discovered here, looking at the 90s, so I appreciate that work. And I would There's a few other things that I would also recommend you look at, and I'll talk to you offline about that. But top level thing, most important thing, is what are we paying the CEOs? Because if you're making, well, really anybody in the organization making more than the governor, that should be a hard scrutiny and a hard look at that. So thank you for doing that work.
Representative Pinto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask to be called on. I didn't think that I was, but that's good. I guess you read my mind. I appreciate
that. We're in
sync.
Yeah,
indeed we are. Well, first, thank you so much to the chairs. As the founding chair of this committee, I have to say I felt a lot of grief. I'm feeling bad throughout this session, not being on the committee. I miss being on it. But I have to say it gives me such confidence to have the two of you be in charge. And so really grateful to you for your work. And I think it's good for us to highlight at this point just the fact that the House has a dedicated committee for these issues relating to the new state agency, Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I hope that our partners across the Capitol will move in that direction. I just wanted to, I guess, highlight one thing and or highlight two things, I suppose. One is appreciate so much the funding for SSIS, and again, thanking the chairs of Ways and Means for that as well. There will be a meeting of the Legislative Task Force of Child Protection next Monday. I know the two of you will be presenting on your bill, which I appreciate. And just maybe wanted to highlight for the members as well that SSIS will be a particular focus of that, in part to make sure that our partners in the other body are recognizing just the extreme need to replace that system. And so grateful to all four chairs, I guess, in the room for that, and we'll be highlighting that. And then the other thing is I've talked to both Chair Cadiz-Witun and then just recently Chair West about the issue of cameras in early care and learning facilities. I'll admit to having a lot of hesitation about that, about mandating cameras to begin with, but setting that aside, I do think it's really important, I've spoken to both of you, that the actions we take to protect kids shouldn't distinguish based on license type. So whether a particular license that somebody has is described as a child care center versus family child care, we know that we want to make sure that kids are protected in either of those settings. I think one of the folks who testified in your committee about their child being harmed in a child care facility was actually in a family child care. I know that language in the bill only applies to centers. Again, we've talked about this, but I do hope that whatever ends up coming out of conference, again, I'm not so certain that mandating cameras does make sense in my opinion, but even if it does, we should certainly have the same rule regardless of whether of the setting. And so we just want to kind of urge that as you head into conference. And again, grateful to both of you for your work on the entire bill. Thank you.
Closing comments, Chair Cadiz-Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members, for the discussion and the continued support and interest from all of you in how best we move forward to better serve Minnesota's children, youth, and families. I think that there's a lot of overlap between the work that we all do in our individual committees and how we take that to the people of Minnesota. And I think this is a good bill. It moves us in the right direction, and look forward to ongoing policy work with my co-chair in the future. And thanks to all of our nonpartisan and partisan staff as well. They were tremendous helps, as both Chair West and I are new to chairing this session.
Chair West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. This bill, I think, represents some of the best work that can come out of a evenly divided legislature, and I am confident, you know, our positions that we will have in the House represent the entire state. They don't just represent a particular section of the state, and I think that gives us a very strong position when entering into conference. So I'm sure all of our bills that we're working hard on will come back very close to the way they left. And hopefully that goes nice and smoothly. But thank you for your time and attention to this wonderful bill.
All right. And with that, the bill is laid over. This concludes our agenda for today. Chair Torkelson, anything you want to add before we adjourn?
I thought we should talk a little bit about Monday, as we have nothing on the agenda tomorrow, so we will not be meeting tomorrow. We will be meeting Monday. I anticipate K-12. The combination of state government elections, human services, and possibly some other member bills, which have not yet been determined which ones they might be, but we'll do all the work we possibly can. Time on Monday has not been determined either. I don't think it'll be early, though. So Harry tells me it's going to be 12:30. So
I think Harry's pretty smart.
Anticipate a 12:30 meeting on Monday with those bills and possibly others, but stay tuned because we're in that time of the year when things can change quickly, and we may need your cooperation at some other opportune moment. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.